Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered, and I, as you know, am one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, well, the smiling Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
Aw, how are you?
I'm good. I actually forgot to mention, last week on the show, I forgot to tell you, some friends and I went to a local pub here and did their pub trivia.
Ooh.
But it was themed on Parks and Rec.
Nice. My wife just finished that series.
Yeah. So it was really difficult. We'd done the Harry Potter one for the same like pub trivia group a few years ago, and it was really difficult as well. Like, incredibly difficult. Like, I like to think of myself as a pretty seasoned Potter reader, but man, I was very unsuccessful at that. But this time we were competing. There was 27 different groups, and we took third.
Nice.
I was pretty impressed with my Parks and Rec trivia.
Goodness.
So completely unrelated to what we're talking about here, but generally those interests overlap. So.
And then you were like, "I want all the eggs and bacon that you have." I think what you heard me say was that I want a lot of eggs and bacon. What you actually heard me say is, "I want all the eggs and bacon you have." So.
Yeah, there was some really cleverly named trivia groups, but my favorite was I'm Purred Happily, and the name of this trivia team is Trivia Team, which I thought was genius. And the host hated that team because he had to say that every time he read off the rankings.
That's awful.
It was great.
Oh, man. Well, welcome to Owl Post, where you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. In fact, you know, one of the best places is over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whichever one you're at. And while you're there, hit us up with a star rating review, letting us know what you think of the show, letting others know what you think of the show, and helping the show grow. You can find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. You can also find us online at thenerdparty.com, where you can send us an email over at thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show and choose Owl Post, and that will come to Drea and I. Drea, chapter 33, The Death Eaters, and, Voldemort is back, and he asks...
Shocker!
Yeah. Well, I mean, we spoiled that last episode, so sorry about that, folks.
Except for the last line of the last chapter was, Voldemort is back.
Yeah.
Well, Lord Voldemort has risen again.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Didn't spoil too much.
No, not. I mean, she did. It's her fault. You can blame J.K. Rowling.
Blame her.
Yeah, just blame her.
Angry tweet her or something. You might be like 8 years too late, but that's okay.
I mean, people angry tweet her for lots of things. Because again, that's what Twitter's for, right? Is angry tweeting.
I'm sorry, you're 18 years too late.
Yeah. So,
but you know, go for it.
Yeah. So, Voldemort is standing there and Wormtail is begging, please. And Voldemort asks for his arm. And not that arm, Wormtail, the other one, the one with the red tattoo, and he presses it, and, a lot of Death Eaters show up in a circle around him, and this whole chapter is pretty much Voldemort just peacocking about how awesome he is, and berating his followers about how awful they are.
Yeah, I actually didn't like this chapter, not because I don't like Lord Voldemort. I mean, I enjoy a good villain like everyone else. I didn't like this chapter because of how just blatantly expository it is. And I know you and I have talked about that in movies and different things before. I found this highly expository. It's basically just Voldemort telling you where he's been the last 13 years and talking about how amazing he is.
He gets out his slideshow, you know, he starts clicking through the picture.
No, yeah. I'm just kidding. If anyone gets that reference, I want to know, because that was a reference to something. It's just him basically, you're right, peacocking about how amazing he is and how much all of his followers have, you know, betrayed him, except for a handful. You get a couple, there's a couple of pieces of really interesting information we learn in this chapter. The identity of some some Death Eaters are very clearly noted to Harry, and it's not done in a dramatic fashion like you kind of get in the movie. It's just sort of, it's just stated and you move on, and you're not really shocked to find out that Lucius Malfoy is a Death Eater, and that, you know, his friend, that Crabbe and Goyle's dads are Death Eaters. You get a name drop of the Lestranges. You get that name drop in here, which we haven't. Yep, which we haven't. I don't believe we've heard anything about them yet.
I think this is
in the series, but they'll come into play not just in this series, but other series. Speaking of trailers from our last recording, we get kind of a bunch of information on people sort of dropped. Avery is another one.
Yeah.
We get a couple of Ministry of Magic people dropped in here that we're not really super familiar with and don't play really any role at all in the movies. But you imagine that since you've named them, they're going to be important in the books. So, and you learn about the disappearance of Bertha Jorgens and what really happened there.
And on top of that, we also learn that Voldemort is half Muggle, which is really interesting to learn. It's a little bit like Hitler being part Jewish. She's definitely, you know, making that, you know, parallel here of the character that hates, you know, something actually being part of that. And so, you know, I like this chapter in some ways, and I also agree with you that there's maybe a little bit too much exposition in the sense, like, we already knew some of the stuff, but Voldemort makes it very clear.
Does he need to take off one accessory? Does he need to listen to Coco Chanel, remove one accessory before going out into the chapter?
But I love the fact that what we get here is a character who is so proud of himself. And, you know, he talks about this idea of, you know, how he's gone further than everybody else to defeat death. And this is the moment where you begin to see that Voldemort's only reason for existing is to continue to exist, and he will do anything possible to continue to exist. And we see the lengths at which he has gone to do that, that he's willing to murder people. He's willing to do whatever, I mean, literally whatever it takes. You know, he's willing to exist on unicorn blood and, snake venom from Nagini to exist. I mean, like, this is to embody
like rats.
Yeah,
and
he's like nuts.
He just other snakes. He preferred snakes, but they didn't hold up very long. I like that so I really don't like snakes.
Yeah,
a little info
either.
About me, y'all. I don't like snakes at all. This movie and these books are really hard for me to read because of how much I hate snakes. And I loved, though, that he was like, oh, yeah, I like to take over snakes because they're, you know, like, soulless. Or I think he calls them spiritless. They're void of spirit. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, snakes.
Snakes. Yeah, take that, snakes.
Well, I mean, you know, they were cursed at the very beginning of the Bible, so I agree with you. Snakes, not good.
Well, I mean, she does not. She uses snakes as a vessel of evil in this whole thing. They're very much so symbolic. That's just what they serve within this, the narrative of the entire story. There's never anything good has come from these books whenever a snake's involved. It's sort of an omen of bad luck. So,
well, and I mean, this is the chapter where we clearly outline, you know, what Voldemort expects from his followers, which is to do anything for him whenever, even when they think he's dead. Like, no, why did you stop looking for me? Of course you knew I had been, I'd done everything I could to not die. How could you just think that I had died? What, you know, how could you think that, oh, this boy had anything to do with me not existing anymore, with all the lengths I've gone to continue to exist? You know, he really is reaming these people and giving them what for, you know, thinking he was dead. And on top of that, it's this praise of people that aren't there, like we mentioned, the Lestranges, and this continued just disgusting attitude towards Wormtail, who is really, I think at this point in the story, such a slimy, nasty creature who really in the same way, only cares about his own existence, right? Like, he's willing to sacrifice whatever he needs to sacrifice to continue to live, even if that means serving Lord Voldemort, who gives him a silver hand as a reward, which is kind of weird and creepy and strange all at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, we get this big sort of just... I don't know, soliloquy, I guess, for lack of a better word, that he goes on this big...
You got me monologuing!
That... right? Yeah. He gets on his soapbox, if you will, and, I don't know, speaks for the first time in 13 years. I don't know. I guess if I hadn't talked in 13 years, I'd, like, in full sentences like that, I'd want to get on a soapbox, too. I mean, you guys listen to me ramble for 45 minutes a week, so let's be honest here. But there are a few elements of foreshadowing that he does provide within this sort of large expository moment, both for the rest of this book and to continue on through the series. You've already sort of hit on one where he talks about the great extent to which he has gone to survive and how they know the other extents that he's gone to, which is new information for us. Additionally, that he has a mole in Hogwarts, which is something that we had been speculating on over the last, 17, 18 chapters, whatever chapter number we're on now. I don't know. I didn't count them. Are they numbered?
We're on 33.
Yeah, they are. Okay. For the last, 30 some odd chapters, we've been speculating that there's got to be a mole here at Hogwarts. So, he confirms that and you come to find out it's a long-term follower. And now you have so many questions going through your head. So he kind of confirms some of those things and, which is important for us to know going forward. But as for Wormtail, I feel like Wormtail is that kid in the group of cool kids in high school that they don't really like, but he does stuff for them. So they keep him around because they can kind of like beat up on him. I feel a little bit like it's a evil version of the cool kids club. It's like Voldemort is Regina George and Mean Girls and Wormtail is... whichever the one that could check the weather with her breasts. but I mean, there's such parallels to that dynamic. It's interesting that it's playing out here again in a much more dramatic fashion, but it's definitely a dynamic that I feel like anybody who's been through a school system can relate to. A kid, a teenager, or an adult, we're all like, oh, we've been there, man. We've been there. It's so hard to watch.
Well, and on top of that, we get this very bad news that by using Harry's blood, he has broken what we think is the curse that he can't touch Harry. Now he can because their blood flows through each other's veins. Like he is now connected with Harry in another way that breaks one of the enchantments that had been keeping Harry safe. And you get this, it's a real downer of a chapter, especially when we learn that.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we start to see him as being quite victorious in this scene. And then, of course, on top of that, I mean, we just keep adding layers. He just keeps monologuing and it just keeps getting worse every time he says something to the point where, like you said, we learn about the fact that there's a mole at Hogwarts and he learned all this from Bertha Jorkins, who Wormtail was able to talk into going on a walk with him. Like, how does Wormtail talk a girl into doing anything? I just don't know how that's possible. But apparently Wormtail's pretty persuasive because they go on a walk, and she gives Voldemort all of this information, and then he offs her when he's done with her. Like, the thing I love about this chapter is, on top of the last chapter, when we talked about how evil it makes him, it just continues to compound his evilness. Like, Voldemort is... it's like, if he wasn't at the highest level of evil, if you wanted to argue that evil exists, like, Voldemort's a pretty good example of just the fact of how evil can be. And the person who is completely 100% selfish. Like, there's not a bone in his disgusting body that isn't selfish.
Well, I find it interesting, too, because in in the movies, Bertha Jorgens is kind of a side note, and it's sort of alluded to that that's how this information got out. But in this case, she is definitely depicted that she was almost kind of culpable of some of these things. Like she shared information with him. It was depicted as like very willingly, and like she told him how to do these things and all of the information he needed. And she's definitely painted as like she gave him what she needed, and so he disposed of her, not he tortured it out of her and she died as a result. You know, and it's very different depiction and interesting to see how that plays out and if that translates to be the same or if she sort of gets painted differently or if this is kind of the end of her. But I did kind of get this feeling of like almost she was being complicit to what's going on here. You know, whether she's selling herself, you know, selling this information to try to save her own skin or what. It was an interesting perspective on how this went, especially considering the little bits of background we have about his interrogation tactics in the past.
No, I agree with you. And I think it goes to show what we have learned about Bertha Jorgens from the memories that we've seen and from the conversations that people, just the fact that she's somebody who likes gossip. You know, she likes being a gossip. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that ends up killing her in the end, because the information she shares with Voldemort doesn't seem to be all, I mean, it's kind of innocuous. It's just stuff. It's just news of the day, like what's going on at Hogwarts, what's happening in the wizarding world, oh, the Triwizard Tournament's back, you know, all of these things. And the fact that he, you know, he did you break a memory charm on her that was very powerful. So, you know, there is some coercion, but yeah, it's part of that is just that he is taking advantage of who happens to have been found, which is somebody who is quite capable of just, you know, enjoying telling people things because she knows them. So, and it all culminates in the end where he's talked about how great he is and how much better he is than everybody else. And now it's come to this point where he wants to prove himself against the great Harry Potter. So yes, Voldemort is going to take on a child because he's just that petty.
And I love his like diatribe leading up to that is like, there's no mom to protect you. There's no Dumbledore to fight for you. Like, you're all on your own. I do like that he feels like he needs to taunt like a 14-year-old mm-hmm. boy. Like, he's proving to be a fairly close to immortal creature. And he feels like he needs to taunt a 14-year-old boy. That to me is like the equivalent to those like giant rims or the like things that hang off the tailgate on some trucks. And like, it's just the people removing the mufflers. Like, it's just a contest. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous because Harry is like 14 and has very little idea of what's going on here. He's just angry and in pain. So, you know. You probably could have killed him and he wouldn't have even noticed. Like, you probably could just do it and it wouldn't be a big deal.
I think it really does a good job of showing how pathetic the character of Voldemort is. You know, here you, I don't know, I guess rereading that, I come away just so, it's not like I'm scared of Voldemort or anything. I just feel like you are just one pathetic loser. Like, you.
He's so small.
Yeah.
He comes
yes.
across as so mm-hmm. very small. Yes. That you're just like, and maybe it's age that you and I have come to the point that we know this is all just bravado and it's not doing anything. But the fact that he feels he needs to be projecting this is just kind of sad and makes him.
He's compensating for something.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think it's interesting, though, that he wants to like fight Harry and not just kill Harry. Like, he does feel like he needs to prove himself. So I think it's an interesting twist that first read through, you probably wouldn't expect. You just expect him to try to kill Harry. But in this case, he's not just going to try to kill him. He's going to try to fight him and prove he's better than Harry, and that this wasn't some, you know, this was just a fluke and not anything that makes Harry special.
And yeah, I mean, honestly, it's just totally pathetic. You're like, you know, get a life, dude.
Do you even kill, bro?
Yeah.
No, seriously.
yeah. And what I think is interesting here is the setup. You know, he does the same thing that obviously every villain does that becomes their downfall. Like, he's his own worst enemy, you know? And what I like about that is because we've set up Voldemort as this character that is just nasty beyond all measure throughout these last two chapters that we've read, it's fascinating then to see him. Then, like you were just mentioning, he becomes this petty little thing here and at this part of the chapter. But we also know how powerful he is. But he is again setting up himself to be hoisted on his own petard. And in fact, this chapter is the very moment that he cedes his own defeat. These last two chapters. Yes. And that will come into play later on, but we're just going to plant that seed for you there. We're going to put a pin in it, and we're going to move on because, you know, we would jump the timeline way too much to talk about it. But it is fascinating to see that, and I really appreciate her as she's weaving this story. She's creating a story in which, you know, evil undoes itself by itself. And, you know, that's a very classic part of literature. It's a very classic part of religion to see, and theologies and philosophies. And like, she's using so much of classical genres here that it's great. It really is. It's a good job, and it makes me excited then to continue on with this, but also the series in general. And I think it's one of the things that, because she uses so many archetypes and archetypal themes, it's what makes the series rereadable over and over again. And it's what helps the series be something that will last, because she never gives you a tie to anything specific.
Everything is timeless. Yes, nothing is tied exactly, so specifically exactly, that it feels outdated. You know, there's themes that come back and feel, we've talked about in other episodes, that felt very, you know, very relatable in current political climate on some of those things. So I think we're going to see more and more of some of those thematic elements that are going to become relatable as we go forward into the next book and the following book. But yeah, this one in particular, using that theme of sort of evil undoing itself. And I think she starts to weave a little bit of something that becomes a really big part it becomes a really big part in Order of the Phoenix, and that whole concept of, you know, like manifest destiny and creating, and sometimes trying to avoid something creates it, and that, you know, some things are inevitable and some things by trying to create, but, you know, you undo yourself and you do a lot of things to yourself. So that definitely starts here and plays a really big part, and that the small things that have happened in the last couple chapters are going to be huge in the next few books, which we sort of talked about for quite a bit in the last one, but it even adds more into it here. Yep. It'll be really interesting to see that all play out here over the next couple of books and the next couple of chapters. Next chapter, we're going to start with them dueling.
Yay!
A very, very proper gentlemanly kind of duel is so fascinating.
You know, 10 paces.
Tarn.
10. yeah, I can't wait. I am so excited to be at this part of the book, and I'm
I really am kind of chomping at the bit. I kept myself from reading, and I haven't read that chapter yet, but I really wanted to. So luckily, as we're recording, you know, Survivor has started, and we're recording on a Wednesday, so I can go watch Survivor and keep my mind away from wanting to read that chapter of Harry Potter. But while I'm trying to distract myself, Drea, where can people find you online if they want to catch up and talk to you about all things Harry Potter, or, you know, just maybe they just want to say hi?
Sure, come say hi or test my Parks and Rec trivia on Twitter.
It's literally the best idea I've ever heard.
Or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And I'm over on Twitter at MattRushing02, and I'm on Instagram under that same name. And then you can find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations as I talk about Star Wars each and every week with John Mills. You know, it's... Just check it out. You're going to love it. It's fun. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones on The Orb. And then I'm on the General Geek Show, which is the 602 Club, as we talk about all things geeky. In fact, I'm kind of chomping at the bit. You know, I know Drea doesn't watch trailers, but, you know, with that new Fantastic Beasts trailer, I can't wait to see that movie. And Drea and I will be talking about that movie over there. So you can check that out and look forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing a little dance here, guys, for that.
And of course, I'm doing Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But we just want to say thank you so much for checking your Owl Post.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.